Blog Talk Radio.
Option Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. We have such an unusual, I think, show for today. I went through the death of my parents, as did you, and sort of stumbled and blumbled through. But our guest today is going to talk about this in a very entertaining and fun way, which that astounds me, but it's a much-needed discussion because none of us get out alive. So I'm looking forward to having our guest. She's the author of Sunrises and Sunsets, Holly Kelly. So we'll be with her in just a few minutes. As always, we have some things to share with you. We are simultaneously broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio. That's the audio portion of the show. And then we're also doing audio and video on, I just totally forgot
WebEx. We're doing.
WebEx, isn't that? That went through my mind. No, that's not the right word. On WebEx, so people can watch the show. So they can go to our site, soundhealthoptions.com. Go to the radio site, and we have a picture of Holly up there that you can see. And we also, you can listen to the show. I went back and looked at her picture and stumbled into what a happy person she looks like rather than concentrating on what I'm supposed to say. So you can go to 347-850-1407 on your phone. Can they dial that in on their computer too, Richard?
Yes, you can also, if you're actually sign in, if you become a member of Blog Talk Radio, which you can do for free, then you can log in, and then there's also a tab when you go to the show page to even join by Skype if you want. So you can click on Skype, and click on the tab, the little icon, I believe, on the dashboard, and it'll open your Skype for you, and so you can listen via Skype, or you can call in from Google Hangouts. There are a number of ways to call the 347-850-1407 so you can listen on your computer.
We are sponsored today by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, where we do vocal profiles, and we're sponsored by a particular software today, the Leading Edge, which tells you about your life and what you want to do with it. Just give us a 30-second sample of your voice. Well, actually, you don't give it to us. We give away this program to people. There's a nano voice, a section on our download, so you can just download that. It's free. We want to give it away to people. We're also being sponsored by Neuroplasticity Software. That's on our downloads and for free for people. And as always, just download and go to bonus and download it, and you're fine. A little booklet there for you to use it. And radiation software is also there. So we try to give you enough software to get you started in using human bioacoustics to help make your life a little more pleasant. Richard, we have announcements this morning. I have a couple. For those of you who are on with us, who are our practitioners, we have decoded the Zika virus frequencies and have those available for you on the professional class that will start today at 2 o'clock. We are also want to tell you that the keynote is up, and one of the things I do with the keynote is to put it up a little saying each time, and today is particularly funny, I think. It's one of the Muppets, and they're saying, trying to understand the behavior of some people is like trying to smell the color 9. So I thought that it was such appropriate for the show today because we're trying to understand people's nature and how they deal with things. We also have on there a very long keynote, a very academic keynote that Robert O'Leary, J.D., has written for us. And it's in the middle of the page. It says, multi-page keynote, click here. But the keynote for this week, one of the things that's causing an issue is some of the frequencies that deal with getting pregnant and the thyroid. So I'll just read one sentence. Depending on your brain dominance, it may not be a great time to try to get pregnant because thyroid energies are low while anti-pregnancy hormones are high. We present this column using left brain convention, so if you're right-brained, by all means, go for it. And people can get more information about that just from our site, Sound Health Options, in the news keynote. Richard, we haven't said anything about the keynote for a long time. Do you want to remind people what it is?
The keynote is this amazing thing that Sherry Software takes. It takes the this tones that are coming from what people would refer to as the cosmos. I think of it as the aligning of the planets and how it all bounces around and somehow sound comes toward the earth. And it's this amazing overview for a period of time, usually about a week, of an energy that's happening on the planet. And it's because of the sounds or the tones coming toward earth. And it's called the keynote. And Sherry produces this amazing, overview. I was chuckling because it's a wonderful, that I love that, trying to understand the behavior of some people is like trying to smell the color 9. I felt like that a lot as a kid. So it's very funny. But it's just this wonderful page on the Sound Health Options site where you can find the keynote. And I forget what tab the keynote is under.
In the news.
In the news. And it's, it's a great overview. It gives you a kind of a, this is a good, thing to just know that these things could be possibilities and inclinations or, you might feel a little creakier than usual or just something. It's a great guide. I love the keynote.
Oh, thank you. I want to remind people, too, that we're having a two-day workshop, February 11th and 12th. It's free. The software is included. And it's about compatibility, what kind of partner you are and what kind of partner you would like to have. So if anybody would like to join us, that's also on our site under classes. And you have a couple of announcements too. Richard, you sent me
I do. I'll try and be brief about these, although as we know, I could get on my soapbox. One, I'll start out with a sort of, darker one. With Erin Brockovich was on the Stephen Colbert show the other night, and she was talking about the Flint, Michigan issue because more than a year ago, or just about a year ago, many residents of Michigan and of Flint had contacted her offices about doing a class action suit, and it's been kept very, stealthy. There's that. And there's also the comment that Brockovich made saying that I can tell you that Flint, Michigan is the tip of the iceberg. That this is a national crisis that we're not ready to face. This crisis is already here. And what she's talking about is there are other cities in the country that are having issues with their water supplies because we haven't done anything to maintain the infrastructure of our water supplies. And so she's really pointing out that the Flint incident is particularly, I'll use the term, horrific, with the lead being released into, school children and being denied by the Snyder administration. In my opinion. But what she's really saying is that really we need to be looking at our national overall water situations in the sense that there's a lot of oxidation going on, not to this level of Flint, but a lot of bad stuff in our water, and we're not really paying attention to the infrastructure to make it stronger and replace the pipes that need to be replaced. So there's that.
That's a gnarly one. We talked about that a little last week. If people want to go back and listen to that archive.
Right.
Okay.
And then I have a more upbeat thing. This is interesting that there's the first school district in the United States to go GMO-free meals. It happens to be in California, here south of me slightly, in a Sausalito Marin school district. But they're going to be serving completely non-GMO food in the cafeterias. So I think that's very cool. I would like to see a whole lot more of that. That would be wonderful.
That's incredible. And a new article has just come out that it's not the actual GMO food, but the glyphosate that's in the food, not the genetic modifying is causing a problem, but the glyphosate that come from the making them resistant to Roundup, the weed killer, that's really causing a problem. We should get Dr. Seneff back and talk about that. I think that's incredible. And we are doing, one of our practitioners, Jessica, is doing a research project about this, so maybe she'll come on the show and talk a bit about the glyphosate and how that fits into our immune system or doesn't fit into it.
Yeah, that would be great.
I think that's all the announcements. Yes, I've gone down through them.
Okay. All right, and I would be delighted to introduce our guest, Holly Kelly. Holly's the founder of the Ladder Life Planning Institute, has a bachelor's degree in journalism and a master's in gerontology. She's also a credentialed professional gerontologist and hosts workshops on ladder life issues and advanced care planning, writing and officiating funerals, and providing end-of-life consulting. Though much of her work is about life's inevitable destiny, her focus is always about living your best life now. Holly lives with her family in northern Alabama. Holly joins us today to talk with us about her book, Sunrises and Sunsets, Final Affairs Forged with Flair, Finesse, and Functionality. Good morning, Holly.
Oh, wonderful. Good morning, both Sherry and Richard. It's my honor to be your guest today.
I'm laughing because there's just so much that we could talk about. You've put the I'm shocked even at myself saying this. You've put the fun back in death and dying. It's really you know, as we were talking backstage before the show started, I had both my parents have died, and I just think that this book, when I first got it, I thought, oh, it's just an organizational, you know, another organizational tool, but it's so much more. Because it's both about getting organized for the death, and it's about the person who's actually going to be dying, really handling, you know, going through the material and writing it down and saying, this is what I'd like, and making an actual plan. Not that they have to organize everything, but giving people who are in a state of shock the information on how to move forward after the death. And I just think it's an unbelievably powerful tool. I'm so delighted to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. And even to add on that, it ends up being a gift to their survivors in that it becomes a written version of their legacy and continues to convey their love long after their departure. So I appreciate so much that you are getting the essence of the book.
It's so powerful. And I have to ask, what started your journey? Why are you here? I mean, I mean that in the sense of how did you have the like aha moment, or what was the like vision that you had that you put together this work? That this seems to, I will say that this is like your life's work. From what I read of your site and the services that you provide and the workshops that you do, you've made this amazing work. What was the journey that got you here?
Well, I often say Humpty Dumpty didn't fall, he was pushed, and so much of life ends up being that way, where we're kind of pushed in a certain direction. In this particular case, while I was culminating my gerontological studies, it was required at the end that you do a capstone project.
Hold on a second.
Something's leaking from the other side, Sherry.
Stop a minute.
Inspiration in our
Can you tell that I have...
Holly Kelly,
I went into her site to show people, and all of this started, and I don't know how to turn it off.
Oh, just go to another page. Just go to another page. To the rescue.
I wanted to show people your site, but I'm sorry I messed up your answer here.
Oh, no, it's no problem at all, and thank you for sharing the site. While I was studying and preparing for that capstone project, I decided that I needed to do a project that would keep me engaged, and I have been a lifelong writer, so I decided that I would definitely do a written work of some kind. And I thought about what was relevant, what had I learned along the journey that really mattered. And I remembered a paper that I had written on advanced directives and the staggering statistics of people who fail to complete advanced directives. So I felt that that was a genuine social and personal, individual, spiritual issue, and not for the United States, but worldwide. So that kind of propelled me to think about how I could address the issue of advanced care planning, namely, at that particular time, it was advanced directives. And I quickly realized that if I write about this, that is kind of a lackluster topic. It's not very interesting. And so I thought about, where is the story here? What can I do to make this interesting, to compel people? And so I decided, rather than write more about the issue, to try to create a work that would close the gap a bit, that would ameliorate the disconnect that occurred there. And so then I began adding to it and thinking about, what would I need when I lost someone that I loved, and what does the individual themselves need along life's journey to prepare for this? So the work grew and culminated into what you have in front of you today.
How do you bring this topic up to somebody that you think needs the service? Because it's such a touchy subject.
It is a touchy subject. And, you know, what's interesting is that we all know that our time here is limited, in that, you know, we're here for a period of time and we don't know exactly when our time to exit our mortal existence, known as life, will come. And so I think the most important thing to acknowledge is that, you know, ignoring it won't make it go away. This is going to happen, and does, to every living organism on Earth. And so starting with the fact that ignoring it doesn't make it go away, and that coupled with thinking of how this is a wonderful way for you to ensure that your wishes and desires are honored and acknowledged, and then stepping it up to the next level, which is how you take care of those you leave behind by performing this type of planning and engaging in the process, so that you alleviate burden and you also instill hope and encourage healing through this. And so there's just so many reasons to not ignore it and to just face it. And it's like so many other things, it's really just the apprehension. Once you do it and once you begin, that disappears and you become consumed with the joy of creating.
Go ahead, Sherry.
I've been in hospital rooms where there was a partner, you know, a roommate, and their family would come in and they would say, "Oh, Aunt Elizabeth, please don't die. Please stay with us." That seemed to me to be an incredible disservice to people. Is there some parting words that we should share with people, that it's okay and we understand and we'll miss them? And how do you deal with that?
Oh, and, you know, you're bringing to our conscious what we all feel, because we love those in our lives that are close and precious. And so we feel all of those things. And when we are there with somebody that we're losing, we experience the many stages of dealing with our emotions. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who is iconic in the field of death and dying, but she came up with the five stages of dealing with loss, which is denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And it is something that we all go through and end up in different phases of those five stages. So when you are there with somebody, I've even been in that place, because we're kind of stuck between, do we encourage them to keep fighting, or is it time to give them the beautiful gift of acceptance and give them permission and our love to be at peace with departing. And it's a fine line because we have our own desires of not losing this individual that we love so very much. And yet sometimes it comes to our recognition that when the person themselves has accepted it, there is a sense of peace where you decide that you are just going to love them through this. And I think it's important to say, I'm here with you. It's going to be fine. It's okay. You've been amazing to me. Tell them what they've been to you. Tell them how much you love them, and tell them that you know how much they love you.
And I think part of I would add to that. The audience knows that a number of years ago I had a boatload of surgeries, and I was in a healthcare facility for a year, and I was in a facility that had three people to a room, and I had four roommates die in that year, and not dramatically. I mean, they just died in their sleep, or you know, quietly died. And I had the experience of listening to, because we have curtains separating us, listening to people come in who went through all the various forms of exactly what you're talking about. There was the people who were in the drama and shock, and I'm not saying that it isn't dramatic. I'm not saying it isn't shocking. However, there were the people who would come in and would like cry and wail and be sad and, you know, just add to the stress of the person who's already in transition or doesn't know they're in transition.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were a few times where people would come in and just be with the person and hang out with them and what I would call love on them and be with them in the moment. And for me, one of the largest takeaways from being in that facility was how important moments are in life. Because it's really about being with that person in that moment. That's so powerful. That's so, you know, just being in the moment with somebody, whether they're in pain or not in pain, or just, you know, you can kind of tell, well, I've spent a lot of time with people doing that. So you begin to get that edge, and just to be there with them and be present with them in that time rather than all of the other stuff. And that's one of the things I was saying to you before the show, is that the powerful thing about this book is that it really gives people the tool so that as they are actually dying, they don't have to think about all the things they didn't get done or didn't say. It really empowers them in such a huge way. I don't think there's a question there.
You've just raised so many important issues, and that is that sometimes it's hard to leave our moment and join them in their moment because we may be in denial and anger and they're in acceptance. And so you're right. It's so important that we join in their moment and really make the most of that. And when you do work the book and when you do have your affairs in order, it is a different perspective that you end up having about this. I even ask in the book, in the beginning, the very beginning of the book, as we're starting the journey of sunrises and sunsets, I ask readers, I have a question to ask you. Are you ready to die? And then I answer it for them. I'm pretty sure every one of you said a very loud, resounding no. And at the end of the book, they've worked the entire book, we're at the very end, we're wrapping it up, and I say, so I have something to ask you. I want to ask you again, are you ready to die? I didn't ask you if you wanted to die. I asked if you were ready, as in prepared, and now you are. Because it's different when you're prepared.
Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, it's so, as I said, having had two parents die and having no plan, you know, you're already, it's such a powerful tool. I want to jump slightly because I was chuckling in a certain way when I was looking at the chapters of your books. Because, I mean, I figure if people can get past chapter one, which is titled Life Equals Death, if they can get past that, then they can get to the rest of the book.
Oh, yeah,
it's like right out of the gate.
Book, right?
You're holding no punches. You're like, there's no, like, we're going to just mollycoddle you into this. Like, nope, right out of the gate, we're talking about it. Life equals death. If you're born, you're going to die. There you go. Work with it.
I'm getting them on board. That is true. That is absolutely true.
But
there
then,
is no opportunity for denial.
Right. We're not going to – there really is no escape. I mean, I know people have theories and, you know, freeze your brain or whatever it is. But, you know, until now, if you're born, you're going to die. There you go. But I love that, you know, Chapter 2 follows up by, you know, your thoughts on living. Talk to us about, you know, thinking of the thoughts on living chapter. I think that's
really
powerful.
Really important. Okay. Well, thank you. It was really important for me to capture the mindset and the emotional perspectives of my readers' thoughts as it related to life today, because this book was more than figuring out how to plan and prepare for one's final journey. I wanted to instill a well-celebrated and engaged life in the process. So while it's planning for the end, I wanted this book to be just as much about inspiring epic new beginnings. And so we couldn't really figure out where we were going and where we were headed without establishing where are you right now? And in fact, how do you even feel about doing this? What are your perspectives? What is bogging you down today? Because the book is very much a journey for the reader to rid themselves of the obstacles that are interfering with their best life now. And so I dove into that very purposefully to let the reader themselves answer those questions and have self-reflection about things that could be improved upon and set the blueprint for an incredible, vivacious life moving forward.
And I think that's such a, you know, I think that's so interesting that that's sort of a, I don't know what the word would be. I guess if I was thinking drug-wise, I would say side effect. You don't think that going into this, you know, the talking about a book that's on death and dying, you're really going to be talking about living.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a powerful thing to have, you know, to have people get that. That, yeah, you know, this is a book on dying. However, it's also a book about, you know, living. And you follow that chapter by then talking about your bucket list, which we, you know, hear about in the movies. But I don't think people really think about that much. And I think that's, you know, talk about the bucket list, because I think that's another part that, as I say, here we are, we're looking at a book and we're thinking, oh, this is about dying, man, bummer. But really there is a sort of, you know, there's a joy to a number of these chapters, and that bucket list is a whole other idea. Talk a little bit about the, you know, actuality of writing a bucket list.
Well, I am definitely an advocate and supporter of bucket lists, and people seem to associate bucket lists with that thing far off into the future that once you've retired and you're not clocking into a career or workplace anymore, you're going to do this task of having a bucket list. And people say all the time in frivolity, oh, I'm going to make that on my bucket list. I'll put that on my bucket list. The truth is that I think every adult of all ages should have a bucket list. This isn't something on a far-off land for later. And the reason is that it sets a really good blueprint for exciting, adventurous, soul-soothing activities in your life every day, now and into the future. And it is so important that we self-analyze and think about what are those things that we receive joy from? What are those things we anticipate doing? And why are we putting them off? Because we really have today. Tomorrow is an unknown. And we should be making sure that we're having a fulfilling life. And so your bucket list is definitely about living. Dying is the deadline. And it doesn't have to be grandiose things. It can be simple things like you're going to stargaze. You're going to get a blanket, get out on your front porch, and you are just going to stargaze, either by yourself or with someone you love, over a cappuccino. And it can be something huge and epic, like my editor did after working this book. She said, you've renewed my entire life, and I'm working my bucket list, and the first thing I'm going to do is go ziplining in Costa Rica. She's 70 years old and spent 3 weeks in December ziplining in Costa Rica. And so it can be small, large, cost nothing, be expensive, and everything in between, but it needs to be yours.
Well, I'll jump on back for a moment, and back when I was in the healthcare facility and I first was able to go out, that was one of the first things I did. Was a friend had come up to visit me, and we went out and had a coffee, which is not a big act in this day of, you know, coffee everywhere. However, that was really the moment when I had the aha with him, that it was about each moment, how moments were really so precious. And I don't, and it's really, it sounds so simple, but it's really so true, that having lost, you know, I was in a, you know, locked facility, not because I was deranged, but some of my housemates were. But I mean, just in the sense of I was had no privileges. I couldn't go any. I could get up and walk around, but I couldn't go anywhere. And so when you lose that,
yes,
and then get that back, each moment is really important, man.
I mean, it changes your perspective very much.
It really
so
changes your perspective. Yeah,
some
you know,
small
so
like
I,
that, and it's true.
Yeah, it's so powerful
that.
That, you know, really, that is such a, I don't know why we've sort of lost, I don't know if as our culture, I see other cultures, like you see in Japan, you see the tea ceremony or meditations or other things, but here we're all so busy going, that you don't realize, like I hadn't planned to be hospitalized, I hadn't planned to be sick, it wasn't like I had, there was any plan, oh yeah, I'll do this for a year now. I got really, really sick, I almost died, and I ended up there. And so really appreciating the moment, you know, out walking in nature, going for a walk with a dog, sitting and having a cup of coffee with a friend. Each of those moments is really great.
Yes, and I wrote a poem in the book called Moments because I'm right there with you. We tend to be living life in the fast lane, and we are such a busy, busy world, and we have so much on our plate that we forget about the incredible value of just a given moment and how important it is to just sometimes be with yourself and focus just on the simplicity of breathing and smiling and cherishing.
I think the first step in dying is to be born, and the second step should be they buy your book. And it's really a guidebook. Yes, yeah, it's a workbook. There's a lot of fill in the blanks there. But it's a guidebook. In your book, what are the logical steps that somebody should do? Should they do legal things first? Should they do funeral things first? What comes first with this?
Well, I did try to set the workbook up in a way that you weren't just going through the motions of completing a task and checking off a list. I wanted this to really be a call to personal action in that it's a journey, much like life, this book is. And as you work your way through the pages, you're having a bit of a transformation yourself in your thoughts and perspectives. And that is my goal, is to have people think a little bit differently and start evaluating what is precious and what matters most. And so the tasks and everything else are certainly important that we have in the book, and people can jump around as they desire to. And I say, you know, maybe work on what your heart compels you to work on. Maybe if you're not feeling it, then it's not the time to write your own obituary. Maybe just log all of your credit cards and all of your accounts that are on auto pay. Maybe it's a day for just business stuff. But in the end, when you finish the book, you've completed everything, but you've done more than that. You've kind of changed how you're going to live moving forward. So it is important that you do your advanced directives. The first thing in the book that I have people do, after they've explored their thoughts on living and dying and acknowledge the importance of this journey, is I have them create their own bucket list. And it's for any stage. And just like Richard was saying, how much that coffee meant to him, I recall one of the most beautiful moments that I read about, which was a lady that was being driven by an ambulance on her way to hospice. And the ambulance driver was speaking with her on the way, and it was early morning that they were en route to what was next in her life journey. And she talked about how wonderful it would be to enjoy sunrises in her future and everything else. And she was agonizing about what was next. And this gentleman pulled this ambulance over, got out a chair, and they sat there and watched the sunrise on the side of the road. To me, that was her bucket list, and that was a beautiful way to prepare her and honor her for what she had next. And so I think it's so important that the bucket list be the beginning of the journey, and then we do the kick the bucket list. We get into some legal stuff, and then I think that the readers are ready by now. They're excited and encouraged to actually do their own obituary, plan their funeral and ceremony. And in Section 3, they begin to share their life story, share family health history, genealogical history, legacy. And then it culminates with writing letters to loved ones. And it doesn't end there, because they're encouraged to continue to find meaning, live in peace, and have a well-orchestrated and predetermined life.
Well, I think that, you know, the Section 2 that you're talking about, there's so much in there, back to my parents, that, you know, just all those chapters, chapter titles, because they're short, I'll just read them for the audience, is in Section 2 is Advanced Directives, Last Will and Testament, Final Wishes, Your Obituary. I like the way you say your obituary. That's a whole conversation. Funeral homes and finances, your funeral and ceremony, and the nitty-gritty deets, my favorite chapter. If people only handled that part, I'm not saying that the other chapters or the other sections aren't important, but that is like an amazing pile of things that if just that was handled, because you're being, you know, the person who's, you know, so you have a parent die, and then you have to figure this all out while you're still in the shock and trauma of the person who just died that is your loved one. So to have this information, and also this, you know, like I say, this really important thing on Chapter 10, which is your obituary, you actually say that in bolded, your obituary. What an amazing thing to actually write down. I just think that's so powerful, the idea of actually writing your own obit so somebody else doesn't have to figure out what you might want acknowledged. I think that's really huge.
Yes, and it's so important, because I acknowledge in the book and in life and the consulting that I do, this isn't a task that you want to leave for someone else, because it really is just that. It's your life, and only you know the incorporations that you want to include in this. So first and foremost, it's a wonderful exercise for people to do. I refer to an obituary as the Cliff Note versions of your life. And then if you flip that and think about, when is someone writing an obituary? They are in grief, a huge state of bereavement, and they are very much challenged to just get through hour to hour, much less have to be creative, try to remember the city that you were born in and where did she work all those years, what's the exact name of that company. And it's just a very challenging time for people to give this important facet of end-of-life planning the attention that it deserves, which is the written version of, you know, your life. And so I think that when you do it yourself, it's soul-soothing and enjoyable, and you have some surprise waiting for those you love, because your obituary can really take on the essence of you.
Well, I think of my, you know, I think of my grandmother when she died, that if she'd written her own obit, she would have probably said something about being proud of making a perfect pie crust. Because that's part of what she did for much of her life. She cooked pies for the, you know, Mormon church. She cooked 100 pies a day for like 40 years.
I love that.
Was like an amazing thing. I mean, she really made an amazing pie crust that I still can't replicate today. But that's a separate story. But I mean, it's really, that's a thing that you might add that people would not think of. And they have that warm moment from thinking, oh, yeah, that's true. Jesse really made this like amazing pie. And if you're leaving it to the people who are in the trauma and shock stage, they might not necessarily know that would be something. And it would make people smile. And that was, we'll talk about, you know, wakes and ceremonies in a minute, but I mean, that was sort of a thing with myself, that when we had the ceremonies for both of my parents, there was to be joy and laughter and crying. But I mean, there was to be the, you know, the acknowledgement of the happy moments that we had with those people. And I think that's really powerful. That whole section is so powerful, to have people actually engaged in their own obituary.
Yes, and you're right, you know, to point that chapter out and say, okay, this is, as I said earlier, it's the technical meat of the work, whereas, you know, probably section three would be dessert, and section one would be your salad and appetizer. So it's definitely important technical and legal facets of what I consider part of a comprehensive advanced care planning.
One of the things, and I keep going back to our own death experience, one of the things with my mother is the nurse came to me and said, there's no hope at this point. What would you like us to do? And so I had a little bit of medical background, and I said, well, how do you really know there's no hope? And I guess there's a couple of chemicals, cadaverin and putrescine, that show up in the blood that says the cells are dying. The body's not died yet, but the cells are dying. So when the medical people come to you and say there's no hope, what do you want us to do? That's a really hard decision. But I went to my mom and talked to her. She couldn't talk, and she wanted to go. She was in too much pain, so it wasn't an easy thing. But can you talk a little bit about how you discuss those kinds of things with the medical personnel that are taking care of your loved one?
Sure, and I think it is different for each person because oftentimes it does happen like you just shared, which is the individual themselves has surrendered and they have found peace and they are ready. And I know a lot of people often associate dying, and it can be certainly, you know, with agony and everything else, but for some people, their passing is peaceful. It's a peaceful moment. And there's just so many stories that validate that the individual's exit just seemed to be something that was soothing and easy for them. But when you're in a situation that hope has kind of been removed from the scenario, and if you're not really sure, I think that always, you know, second opinions are important to ease your mind and conscience because you want to be sure that you've done everything that you can do and to support the individual who, you know, can't or probably is unable to make decisions for themselves. And then I think at that point that you agree that they've turned the corner and that this is definitely going to happen. I think it's time to just support them and be there with them, care for them, share joy with them. At their level, where they're at in life, it may be reading to them, holding their hand, talking. It could be saying nothing and just standing by and being present. There's just so many different ways to be part of that experience. So
My worst part about it was feeling helpless.
And so common, because you do. We don't like things in life that we can't fix and we can't find a solution to, and it just kind of leaves us in uncharted territory emotionally. And I think that's part of what makes this entire conversation so challenging for people, is because it is unpredictable and it is the great unknown. So while we can't control when we go, by working your way through this book, you can actually control how you go.
Wow.
That's such a powerful thing, the how we go part is so powerful. As I say, having been in a room with a number of people who died, that the how we go part is really so, you know, we could do a whole show on that. Because that's
right.
Such a powerful thing. It was so different for people who were with the person that was dying And in these particular instances, these were quiet deaths, meaning there wasn't thrashing and, you know, hospital scenes with that. It wasn't that kind of facility. And to have the people who would, I would put it in the category, from my perspective, of honoring the moment, you know, of really being with the person before they were dying or near when they were dying, or, you know, just the, like, really, you know that the person who is dying has surrendered. And surrendering is not giving up. Surrendering is just knowing that this is what's, you know, it's like you're born and you're going to die, and then there's a moment when you go, oh, I'm dying. Okay, I'm here now. And
yeah.
To be with that person in that time and just be really honoring that is just unbelievably powerful.
Yes, and they have reached acceptance, and very true. And some people are more comfortable having a loved one near them. There's so many accounts where they had someone with them constantly, and the individual that they loved and whom loved them leaves to go get a drink or something, and that individual passed in the few moments that they left. And so I think that each individual has their own way that they want to do that.
Yes. I was thinking about my my father, as I would put it, knowing my father, snuck out, meaning that he just died. Boom. I was out of town for 12 hours and he died. He wasn't traumatic, you know, there wasn't any trauma before he died. He just died. Whereas my mother was in an ICU, and it was an event. And they were quite different. And I was with my mother when she died. And my father just, like, I'm out. Dropped the mic, walked off the stage. That was that. I have a question from the audience, which makes me laugh, partially because it's a sort of a, not exactly nervous, but like, how do you address this? Do you think this makes, your book makes a good, like, birthday or Christmas gift?
Oh, what a wonderful question. Please tell that listener that I'm so happy they asked that, because in the foreword, and I will read it to you right now, this book belongs in everyone's home. Give it as a gift for birthdays, anniversaries, Christmas, Hanukkah. Will the recipient initially be offended? Perhaps. However, I guarantee that once they begin reading your book, they will be absorbed in the content and will ultimately write you a very fine thank you note. That's from Dr. Bonnie Kinn, Director of MS Applied Gerontology, Professor of Psychology at Brunel University. And this book is a wonderful gift for any age, any stage, any occasion. And my mother actually just gave a book to someone that right before the holidays was on hospice, and the doctors said he wasn't going to make it to Christmas. And so probably around December 15th, she knew this, and she goes, what do I do? Like, I want to give him the book. I think that, you know, he's able to write and do things. Do you think that this will help him? So she handed it to the wife and said, if this is going to be, you know, upsetting, please don't give it to him, but I want you to have it in case. The wife said, no, I think that he will find his soul soothing and that this will enrich his journey and how he's feeling. And so they did give him the book, and he was able to actually lose himself in what he was going through and immerse himself in this process, and it was so helpful for the family. His two wishes were to make it through Christmas and then right afterwards his grandson's birthday, which was a few days after Christmas, and he did that. He died January 1st, but he was able to use the book in his final days the best way he could. So excellent question, and I encourage it.
And I have a sort of a sidestep question. In your work, in your gerontology studies and in your work in general, are there other cultures, are we alone in how we treat death? Are there other cultures where it's more, I know in more native cultures it's more honored and there's more of a full ceremony and an honoring event. Did we have that and lose it, or is it just, is it because we're also afraid of death and dying that we have to set it aside, or what's your view on that?
Well, I would say worldwide that death certainly remains top-heavy and being taboo. And while perspectives and outlooks vary from culture to culture across the globe, most people are going to share certainly grief and loss and experience incredible bereavement at the passing, despite the way that they acknowledge the end of a life. And so I think that it is commonly more looked upon as a challenging time for most people, and even in cultures where they celebrate, which is a beautiful thing to do, and they are still feeling, you know, of course, the incredible depth of despair and grieving. But we're not behind. It's something that is moreover a shared outlook, and it is also, you know, still one-third of people, while the statistics vary, that's the running number, is about a third of people still do not do advanced directives. So that tells you this is a simple document. It's available in so many different venues. It's free. And so I would say with that number, that would kind of tell us that this is a conversation people don't want to have.
But there's no getting out of it. Are there different... This is just off on the other tangent here. Are death stories alike, like seeing loved ones and being happy, or is everybody different?
As in when someone, are you speaking near-death experiences, or are you speaking about death stories on the final days and how that goes?
Well, I was with my grandma, and she said, well, her children who had died were there for her, and the angels were there, and she was very happy. To just let go. Is that something that's common?
I love that. And any time that I'm with somebody in their final days, I'm that person that says if somebody has been brought back to life, I say, hey, you know, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to have discovery. And if it's somebody that I know well enough, I ask, what was it like? What happened? Even with my grandfather, whom died. He had actually been in a coma. He died. They brought him back, and he was in a comatic state when they brought him back. And so I saw him every day. I had a way with my grandfather that nobody else in the family had. I could relate to him, and I could make him be nice when he was grumpy and everything else. And so we were very kindred spirit. I walked in the room. I had seen him every morning before work. I would stop and see him. And he was in a coma, but I would just visit. After he had been brought back, I walked in and I held his hand, and he opened his eyes and looked at me. I was just astonished, and we had the most beautiful visit I could ever imagine. And in that moment, I recognized that he could slip away again, and so I got a piece of paper out and wrote in really large letters to him. Because his hearing was poor, I asked him questions, and I handed him a pen, and I had yes-no boxes. And I was asking him, did you see my grandmother? And he checked yes. And I asked him, is there anything that I need to handle for you in case you slip away? It's been our family's mystery to try to figure out what he wrote, because he wrote some things that we can't decipher. But I still have those papers that were wonderful about what happened with him on the other side, and that people have even seen family members that they didn't know existed. I know of somebody that said, you know, when they came back, Mom, I saw my brother. You know, this family had never told their young daughter about her brother that had passed in utero. They never mentioned it, and she was able to convey this, something she shouldn't have known. So I think that that is just spectacular. For us to be privileged to have been shared.
That's incredible. We're looking at Amazon and looking at what your book includes and what people are saying about it. Marvelous. 5 stars. This is a fantastic book that will help professionals and family members dealing with the task of making decisions for loved ones as they advance in age. It was a godsend for us in time of need. Now, these are people who use the book and love what they're saying. Do the professionals accept your book, or they just say you should have stayed out of it, or what's happening with that?
Well, and yes, I am excited about the book, of course, being on Amazon. The book is just released. It's January 8th, so I'm excited that people are already going in there and using the book and telling others about that experience. Professionally speaking, this book has just been really accepted from retirement communities that are going to use this as an activity for assisted living residents to... I have so many books in funeral homes where people are either working with families that have just lost someone, or they are working with someone on pre-need. And so I have the opportunity that these folks have been able to put this book in their funeral home and excited to do it and purchase copies for that. Financial planners are using this book as a complement to the important work that they do. Attorneys are using this book as part of the legal work that they do and extending beyond the legal and entering into the spiritual and emotional and personal side of advanced care planning. So I'm just humbled and grateful that the book has just been welcomed in so many different ways. And it told me as a gerontologist and a fellow in thanatology that the world is ready for the conversation about how to live and die well.
Are there legal aspects of dying that you walk people through?
Well, I think it's important that people shore up the legal aspects, because if you don't, you know, it can lead to so much disparity and infighting and grudges and feuds that often are not undone. That they go on for the life course of survivors. And so I think it's important that you make decisions that are your decisions ahead of time, so that you're able to, of course, have your wishes honored, end-of-life wishes, and then, of course, post-death wishes and desires. There's so many fights about whether somebody wanted to be cremated or buried, and what type of, you know, ceremony they may have wanted. And there's people that say, we're not doing a ceremony. And the rest of the family says, oh, yes, we are. And so I think it's so important that, of course, you have your personal desires as well as your legal information well conveyed. And so that the one thing that you don't want to happen happens, to avoid that, which is, of course, all of us want our remaining loved ones to stay close in our absence. Perhaps the person that passes is the nucleus of the entire family. And what if their passing actually led to a family divide that never ended? That would be the last thing that that individual would have wanted to happen. Their death be the very thing that's the family divide. They were about bringing the family together. So there's so many good reasons to make sure that you handle this and not put this burden on your family, who's more than likely not going to agree on it.
Boy, howdy. Would be my footnote on that. Not agree upon it. Oh, boy, is that a thing. That's a whole nother show. Wow. I have to ask, because I'm surprised to find that we're moving toward the end of the hour. I want to ask about the, partially because I love the title, Chapter 20, The Deputized Death Wrangler. Talk to us a bit about the Death Wrangler, please.
Okay. Well, the Death Wrangler is a cognomen that has just been eternal and accidental at its onset. The very first article on this book, the writer asked me this question that apparently ended up being a very reverberating answer. She said, what exactly did you want to do with death? What was your goal? What did you want to do with it? And I sat there for a moment and paused, and I said, well, I guess I wanted to be a death wrangler. I think I wanted to be a death wrangler of sorts. And so the very first article ever printed in huge letters was titled Death Wrangler. And so I am very fascinated with the Old West, Native American cultures. I'm a huge horse enthusiast. And so I kind of kept with that because while I recognize our mortal lives do come to an end, there is no escaping that. There truly is an emotional, a spiritual, and a personal wrangling of death if you work your way through this book. And in sort of a metaphorical and philosophical way, you have wrangled your personal perspectives on death by the end of this. And you're on the other side of it from an outlook perspective. And you have a sense of peace and tranquility. And so I deputize the readers as also a death wrangler because I'm proud of them. I'm proud of what they've faced, and I'm proud of the work that they have done. And I'm happy for them that this isn't the elephant in the room anymore for them. They are now prepared for their final journey, but they're also, they've looked at their unfinished business, they've taken care of it, and they're on top of the world for living life vivaciously moving forward. So that's that chapter.
That's very cool. I rather like that. Do you have that on your card, your Death Wrangler?
No, I don't.
I think it's going to be great on a card. There's a conversation starter. Wow, that is awesome. It'd be a great website, too, Death Wrangler.
Yes.
So how do people work with you? Where would you like them to get your book and, you know, all of the contact information, please?
Well, certainly, as mentioned previously, the book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and where other fine books are sold. They can visit my website for lots of helpful information and interesting topics, and what I'm sharing is updated regularly, and I have lots of neat obituaries that individuals have written that I just felt compelled to share because they're fun and lively and really speak to the individual that they are. They can subscribe to my newsletter, The Gerontology, and so www.sunrisesandsunsetsbook.com. They can receive autographed copies. That's the only place to get an autographed copy is from my website. So I encourage people to visit that and peruse it and hopefully buy a copy for themselves and those that they love.
That's true. That's very, just until this moment, we had talked about giving it as a gift. We'd talk about giving it to a friend as a birthday present, but we didn't really address the buy a copy, use it.
Yes.
We all sort of, we all think of like the other person dying. Wait a minute. Someday, that's going to be me.
it's always the person sitting to the left and right of you. It's never going to be you.
Wait a minute. No, yeah. I wasn't talking about me. No. Yeah, that's so powerful. That is so cool.
Yes.
Well, I knew this was going to be a great show. I forgot. Do you do workshops and seminars online or just in person or... How does that part
work? I do plan on eventually going to an online format where people from across the globe can actually participate in a workshop, but I do offer workshops, and people can go on the website and request a workshop for their group, and so love doing the workshops. They are just a wonderful way to enjoy the book in a social group setting. It cures all tendencies for procrastination. When the workshop is done, your affairs are in order. And I also have the Leader's Guide coming up in just a little over a week that if you want to lead your own group, if you have a book club or a dinner club or a church or religious group, social, civic, you can just purchase the Leader's Guide and you can lead the group much like I would for your participants. And so it's there's many different venues to get this done. I think the most important part is just doing it.
I love this guy.
Go ahead,
sir. Purchase on your general store where it's talking about you can buy these in bundles. I think that's phenomenal. An 8-book bundle, a 24-book bundle. Awesome.
Thank you. And I've shipped many bundles out this week, and so it soothes my heart that people are not just thinking of themselves, but they're buying so many to share and to work in a family group. And just families can get together and say, okay, every Sunday we're going to, you know, meet at someone's house for dinner. We're going to rotate and we're going to, you know, have a plan with this, but we're working this book because we should and we need to. And it'll be fun.
Yes, my last thought is, you don't know anyone now living who doesn't need this.
True.
That's a message to my audience. Said, buy this book.
Yes.
Yeah.
This book is for anyone who believes they may someday die.
That's a great close. I knew this was going to be, you know, as we were talking backstage before, you usually don't hear the term fun and dying in the same sentence. And I knew this was going to be a good conversation, but it was really, I can't advocate, you know, for people having this kind of information enough. And as I just discovered, oh, maybe I should buy a copy. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate that. Terry and Richard, you guys are amazing, and I so much appreciate you using your platform to share important matters for your listeners, and they're very fortunate to have both of you as leaders to look to. So thank you so much.
That's
thank
awesome.
You. Yeah, thank you. Everybody have a great, great weekend. It's sunny and nice here. It's not snowing and raining, so that's kind of nice for a change. So everybody have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you on Tuesday. I'm not sure the subject, but I know we'll have one. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
And it was known.